And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, alongside Ian Safar, here with you on this Wednesday morning. Rex Road is out today. He will be back tomorrow. Ian Safar, good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning, Robbie. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us today here on the program. We will take your thoughts throughout the show. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 will join us at 7:30. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. But we got a lot to get into on the program today. There is a Tennessee Titan that's getting some love around the country, and there are a few Tennessee Titans that are just getting absolutely cooked, which we'll get into later this hour as well. Some interesting comments from the quarterback series from Kirk Cousins in Atlanta that we'll discuss later in the show as well. And some college football headlines.
You like that?
Oh, man. I never get tired of that.
No, Kirky. Great one.
Especially like when you watch him do everything else and just like how calm he is. Just thinking back to that is absolutely hilarious.
That's a good one.
It is awesome stuff. So we got a lot to get into on the program here today. Ian, I want to start with this. So I saw a little bit about this yesterday and then heard some people talking about it on the way in this morning. So there's this radio host in Kansas City by the name of Kevin Keatsman, and I guess he does this iHeartRadio podcast.
Okay.
And on this podcast, he is basically calling Patrick Mahomes fat and like ripping into Patrick Mahomes. So
interesting.
I guess, you know, Mahomes came out with like these 4th of July photos where he's sitting there with all his entourage and his shirt's off. And I guess this dude thinks he's fat. So this is what he said on the podcast. Quote, vacation photos are popping up of Patrick Mahomes and he's fat. I'm going to say it. I'm going to tell you the truth. That's why you hit the play button. He's an embarrassment. You're a $500 million quarterback. You've made all these comments in the offseason that we're going to do our talking on the field. We got our butts kicked in the Super Bowl. We're coming back with a vengeance. Dude, you're fat. Your belly would be fat in my pool hanging out with us 60-year-olds.
My goodness.
Stop the fast food. Do a sit-up. Do something. There's no training to this, man. I don't understand it. He's not a kid anymore. You can't just run through your NFL career eating Taco Bell all the time. It's time, dude. It's time. That was what Kevin Keats said.
Well, that dude took a couple of leaps there. Are we sure that is the diet of Patrick Mahomes, Taco Bell? Doubtful.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's probably not repeated Taco Bell.
So, you know, that seemed a bit extreme right there. I mean, my goodness gracious. Hey, we can all relate to a little dad bod action.
Yeah.
Come on.
This is, I mean, first off, you know, you're talking about a vacation photo that who knows. You know, Patrick Mahomes has never been confused for like some Greek god out there, right? Like he's,
yeah,
you know, he's a great quarterback. And, you know, I heard LeVar Arrington talking about this, and he was like, go look at the best quarterbacks in NFL history. You know, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, like go up and down the list. Not very many of those guys, like, well built, you would say. Not very many of those guys, like, you don't look at Tom Brady and you're like, man, that guy could be like a bodybuilder.
Well,
he's
famous for that draft photo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, first off, you know, that shows if you're a Titans fan listening to this, and that's what the people in Kansas City are talking about, you're like, hey, screw you, man. Like, you guys are so spoiled that you have to make stuff up in the offseason with your Hall of Fame quarterback that very well can end up going down as the best quarterback to ever play the game. And this is what you guys are talking about in the offseason because he took a vacation photo where he may or may not, by the way, be a little bit pudgy in there, and you're worried about how fat he is. Dude does nothing but win and make Super Bowls and is already, in some people's mind, at least the second-best quarterback in the history of the game, and this is what you guys are talking about? Screw you. That's what I'd be thinking if I was a Titans fan.
I mean, to have it so good, I suppose, if you're – in the Kansas City market. Plus, I mean, didn't we talk about how Will Levis was almost too muscular?
Yes.
And that was a negative for a quarterback. So I think your quarterback needs some type of like You know, I don't want to go all Tom Brady, TB12, pliability.
Pliability, yeah.
Yeah. But you do need a little bit of that, right? I mean, Tua,
I think so.
Tua is like practicing falling,
yeah,
and all that kind of thing, you know, just to make sure. And if you're Mahomes, as much as you play, you need a little bit of cushion. You know, you don't want to, you know, you need a little bit of a buffer there, maybe, so, you know, you take some hits and some bruises. And I don't know who was saying this. I think it might have been Freddie Coleman on ESPN Radio. If you think about all the playoff games the Chiefs have played in since they've drafted Mahomes and how many extra games that is compared to most teams, if you combine them all up, I don't exactly know how many playoff games. Like, you know, it's probably near 20. So he's probably played an extra season,
yeah,
compared to a lot of players during that stretch. So for him, you know, at this point, I think he pretty much has a pretty good idea of how to get his body right during the off season. Yeah. So I'll let him handle that.
Yeah, my advice to Patrick Mahomes would be, hey, whatever you're doing, probably just keep it up. Probably just keep doing that. You know, apparently these comments just really irritated Mahomes' trainer, Bobby Stroop. And he said this, I guess, on Twitter, that since he's now deleted it. Quote, send me your location. Talking about this radio host.
Oh, he wants to fight.
Says, you obviously need attention. If you want to see what in shape is, go make it through a practice at training camp or run hurry-up offense scrambling back-to-back plays. You don't have a clue what it takes. It's not a look. It's performance. This is what his trainer
said. I mean, it sounds, that's true to, sounds true to me. So good for him. Clap back on that guy.
So that's what they're talking about in Kansas City today, is how fat their all-world quarterback is, apparently. I saw this, and I was like, yep, yeah, it must be nice where this is what you have to do in the offseason, because you do nothing but either win or make it two Super Bowls.
Oh, 15 wins. Will they make 15? Will they get 15 wins again this year?
Yeah, it's like, man, you think they're going to get back to the Super Bowl again for like the 75th time in a row? We'll see what happens on that front. But good for you, Kansas City, just drumming some stuff up this offseason.
Although, that division might be kind of good this year.
It actually might. Denver, I'm intrigued by.
Yeah.
Raiders, Pete Carroll coming in. We'll see.
I mean, they won't be a doormat, but I doubt they'll win it.
Chargers, I mean, look, isn't it about time for Justin Herbert?
I was going to say, yeah, there's been a big scuttlebutt lately about Herbert versus Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Given the situation, you know, Herbert gets all the love, you know, Hurts kind of gets some hate, yet Herbert doesn't really win anything yet. So, I don't know. I do expect the Chiefs to win, but I think that could be a fun division.
Some news on the college football front. This taking place in Frisco, Texas yesterday. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark got up there and basically talked about the college football playoff. You know, the Big 12 and the ACC have taken the position of the 5-11 model, trying to determine what the future of the college football playoff is going to look like with the 16 teams. And the ACC, the Big 12, have been in favor of the 5-11 model. And basically, Brett Yormark got up there yesterday and doubled down on that. And I found his quote to be interesting. He says, quote, 5-11 is fair. We want to earn it on the field. It may not be the best situation or best solution today for the Big 12, but long term, knowing the progress we're making, the investments we're making, it's the right format for us, and I'm doubling down today on 5-11. You know, Ian, I've said in this, like, it actually, like, if you look at it, if you're talking about what the Big 10 wants, and that's four automatic bids for the Big 10, four automatic bids for the SEC, and then a couple with the Big 12 and the ACC. Like, I've said, like, in the short term, that's probably the model the Big 12 should want, because if they go 5-11, I don't know that they're going to get more than one team in the college football playoff with the strength of their conference right now. I thought it was interesting that Yormark basically said that. Like, he basically was like, yeah, this may not be the 5-11 part of this. If you're going five highest-seeded conference champions and then 11 at large, that may not be the best for us today, given where the league is. But long term, he expects the league to grow into a spot where it would be. I didn't expect him to, like, outright admit that, but I found that part of it interesting. And even with that being the case, they're still looking at 5-11 to be the way to go here. So it looks like they're at 5-11. The ACC is at 5-11. The SEC is trying to figure their own stuff out, but the SEC has not bent their ear to the Big Ten yet in terms of just going with the automatic bid. So 5-11 seems to be where most of it is heading right now. We'll see if it ends up that way.
Yeah, I guess it is interesting, you know, how some of these, you know, leadership people are looking at this short term versus long term. You know, how much are they looking out just for themselves versus the conference versus college football at large? It's just interesting to try and, you know, figure out whose priorities are where. So it's kind of a mess, but hopefully people can get on the same page.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Matthew from Jolton texting in says, instead of the auto bids, why don't you just have them 1 through 16 and just seed them straight up? I don't hate that idea. I think they're still living in the world where they're trying to make 16 conference champions and conference championships
matter,
mean something. So when they're living in that world, I think you're always going to have some sort of automatic bid in there.
Yeah, because that will probably, you know, people love them some conference championships, whether that's, I don't know who, which people exactly, whether that's the fans or the people in charge who make the money.
Certainly the TV people do.
So, you know, it'll be hard to eliminate those. 1 through 16 would be interesting, although, gosh, a committee to try and seed all the teams like that sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, they've had a, really, I mean, when you look back through the history of all this, I mean, people complained about the BCS, which I understood. People complained about the four-team committee.
We love AI now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why don't we put some AI into the BCS?
Just chat GPT the BCS and see what it comes out with. Yeah. Maybe so. Maybe that's the way to go. But the idea, like the biggest problem I've had with the committee, and this goes back to the four-team playoff, I think we certainly saw it last year in the 12. You know, from week to week, what they value and what they kind of rate these teams on seems to change. Like, one set of circumstances seems to matter when ranking one team one spot, and then those same circumstances don't really seem to matter for another team or another week. So that part of it really bothers me, and I don't know that there's ever going to be a perfect solution to it, but I don't think you're going to see them go straight up 1 through 16 anytime soon. But we'll see. I'm very fascinated to see what the solution ends up being with the 16-team playoff. We got a lot to get into on the program today. We will get into the Titans coming up next, including a Titans player getting a little bit of love out there. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Mellow Mushroom. There's no pizza like Mellow Mushroom Pizza. Stone-baked with fresh ingredients, next-level imagination, and limitless options for customization. It's a higher order of pizza, you know, and love Mellow Mushroom. Get half off a $30 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Gift card good for downtown on Broadway and Franklin locations as well. So make sure you take advantage of that. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. We mentioned yesterday that Jeremy Fowler is doing his annual ranking of positions at ESPN. And again, this is not just Jeremy Fowler coming up with some list. This is executives, coaches, scouts around the league that he is talking to, and then determining kind of an order for each position.
The VIPs.
The VIPs.
That's right.
As they say. That's right. So we mentioned, you know, yesterday talking about the running backs that Derrick Henry was at number 2. Somebody voted him number 6 on the list, and it just bothered me. So we talked about that in the Rob rant yesterday. The defensive tackles were yesterday. So when I saw the defensive tackles were out, I was wondering where Jeffrey Simmons was going to fall on this list. I remembered last year that he was in the top 5, and he was actually 4 last year. And it turns out that's exactly where he is again this year. Number 4 on the list of defensive tackles around the National Football League is Jeffrey Simmons. Now, I saw some discourse from this yesterday that some Titans fans were saying, man, that seems a little high for Jeffrey Simmons. Other Titans fans were saying, see, all you people keep complaining about Jeffrey Simmons all the time, and he's one of the best players in the league at his position. So I guess it just depends on which way you view it. I will say this, like, I'm looking at these rankings, Ian, and, you know, the highest that somebody put Simmons in this exercise here was number 4, mm-hmm. and the lowest was totally unranked. If you go down below him, Quinnen Williams, the highest somebody put him was 3, and the lowest was 8. And then basically it's just kind of a crapshoot from there. Leonard Williams, somebody had him at 2, somebody had him unranked. So what it tells me is there's a pretty clear top 3 in the way that they're viewed in the league,
yeah.
which is Dexter Lawrence at number 1, Chris Jones at number 2 in Kansas City, and then Jalen Carter in Philadelphia at number three.
Hard to disagree with those.
And it's hard to disagree with those, and yeah. You can, in my opinion, kind of rank those really whichever way you
want
to.
Yeah, I might put Chris Jones one.
I think I probably would put Chris Jones one.
They move him around a little bit more, I'd say, than traditional inside guys.
I would agree, and my guess is this time next year we're going to be looking at Jalen Carter, and he's probably going to be number one.
Mm-hmm. Because he's young, too.
He's young, and he was an absolute stud in the playoffs for them last year,
yeah.
And he is an absolute beast. So, you know, it's Lawrence, Jones, and Carter in the top three. And then basically I think after that, starting with Simmons, you see people look at it and start ranking guys differently. So there seems to be a pretty big drop-off after those three there. But, like, if you're Jeffrey Simmons, you're looking at this and you're seeing, see,
even with
I'll take four all day. And, you know, with as bad of a team as I've been on the last couple of years, with not a whole lot of help around him on the defensive line, to still have that perception around the league is interesting. There was an NFL coordinator that was included in this story that Jeremy Fowler quoted here and says, quote, you know, morale gets low and it's hard to rush when you're always playing from behind. Still one of the most complete players. So talking about the situation that Simmons has been in, both from a win-loss standpoint and the fact that the Titans were trailing in a ton of games last year, and the team that was, you know, that they're trying to go back and come back against is running the ball a lot because they have the lead.
I heard DVD talking about that point yesterday a lot. They hammered that, which I thought was a really good point. You know, just the situational play in the NFL dictates a lot of the stats more so than I think we realize.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to certain statistics in particular. Sacks, I think, could be up there. Rushing attempts and rushing yards. You know, a lot of that plays into just like the situation of the game and how the game flow is kind of going. And so when you're behind all the time, all the opposing teams run the ball and you just have less opportunities to rush the passer. And if that's the case, your sack numbers aren't going to be as high. So I know Big Joe was railing about the sack numbers yesterday, and Simmons is an interior guy, and it's not all about sacks for interior guys.
Yep.
And maybe we do, you know, overrate sacks for an interior defensive lineman. But, hey, Simmons fourth, that's consistent. He's staying right there. So, yeah, I mean, in the minds of a lot of the league execs, they're either just going like, who'd we put fourth last year? Just put Simmons again? Or they actually think he's been a consistent player, which I think is a credit to him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the sack total part of it is interesting because, like, on the one hand, you look at Aaron Donald back in his heyday, and I think you always have to remember in this discussion that Aaron Donald is a freak and is one of the best defensive players of all time. But even Chris Jones, right? Like, Chris Jones, I would say, is not quite Aaron Donald, but he's been pretty darn good throughout the course of his career. Chris Jones has had seasons where he's had 15 and a half sacks. He's reached that number twice. He's had 10 and a half sacks. And I know that they've moved him around in the past, but he's pretty exclusively been a defensive tackle the last few years, and he's still put up 10 and a half sacks and 15 and a half sacks and 9 sacks. So Chris Jones is somebody who's actually gotten the sack total. Like Jalen Carter, for instance, really hasn't yet. Like,
and that's where I wonder with Chris Jones, when you're on the Chiefs and you're leading
right.
a lot on offense, when your team is ahead and the other teams are trying to play catch up, you get to pin your ears back in the fourth quarter right. and rush the passer.
Right.
You know, Simmons has had seasons like that, obviously, but not very often, and especially not the way the Titans play, other than, you know, that one year in 2020 where they were just awesome on offense. But most of the time, they weren't go out, throw the ball all over, get the lead, and then just kind of, you know, I guess, you know, kind of keep the lead in the second half and not screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans hadn't found themselves very many 3-touchdowns leads in the third quarter.
So, I mean, especially lately in the last few years. So I can see where that would definitely affect his sack numbers. But, yeah, you know, maybe we overrate the sacks on the interior guys. But because that's pretty much mentioned in every one of those blurbs
right.
about the guys. So-and-so had this many sacks the last three seasons, this and this and this. But, hey, that's what gets defensive linemen paid, sacks.
It does.
Still, regardless of all the new stats and the pass rush win rate and all that kind of stuff, sacks still matter to the guys in the league. Well, so,
and it makes you wonder, like, what are we going to see, not just from Simmons this year, but from the guys around him? Because, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the edge rusher group.
It's not good.
It's not very good. So I don't have high expectations for that. But to me, it makes Tavondre Sweat and what you see from him in year two all the more important when you look at what they don't have on the outside. Because, again, like we just talked about, Jeffrey Simmons. Look, say what you will about Jeffrey Simmons, and we've talked about it a lot here on the show. There's no doubt in my mind that he has got to play better and at a higher level of consistency than he has the last couple of years. Like, I don't think very many people would argue that he has lived up to the contract and the number that he's being paid. Although, like, if you are Jeffrey Simmons, I could see you saying, look at what I've been dealing with the last 2 years. Look at what's been around me on the defensive side of the ball. Look at the team that I've played on the last couple of years and tell me that that's not a factor in some of the production here. Yeah. So that tells me, like, what are we going to see this year? Because you look at the team as a whole, and on paper, it doesn't look like it's going to be very strong for the Titans heading into this year. We know the edge rusher group, at least as currently constructed, without some major surprise, is not going to be very strong for the Titans this year. So unless Sweat takes a massive jump from year one to year two, which is possible, I'm not going to put that past him, but unless he does that, I'm still looking at the help around Jeffrey Simmons right now and wondering where exactly that is, and if it's not to the level that I think it needs to be, what are the chances that we're actually going to see Jeffrey Simmons play any better than he's played the last couple of years?
Seems like he's tried to slim down this season based on some of the offseason chatter from him. I'm not exactly sure the motivation behind that. I don't know if he felt heavy, if he felt winded, if it was an injury situation. Perhaps he's trying to be quicker off the ball to get to the pass rush. Not really sure on that. Maybe we could dig into that more when training camp hits in a couple weeks. But Sweat will be key. I don't, you know, disagree with you on that. And we've seen in the past with, you know, Big Albert how interior, you know, pressure can really help and help the guys on the outside. So if Simmons and Sweat can really turn into a pretty, you know, big duo, that would be huge for sure.
Take your thoughts on Jeffrey Simmons, 615-737-1025, our phone number. He's at number 4 on Jeremy Fowler's list of executives, coaches, NFL scouts, the number 4 defensive tackle in the NFL. Your thoughts on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
He talks a lot about being double-teamed. Mm-hmm. Isn't every good defensive tackle in the league constantly double-teamed, and aren't most of them overcoming that on a regular basis?
I think it's a little more nuanced than that. Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. Most really good interior players are getting a slide to them most of the time, so they have to deal with that. But I think one of the things that we can do a better job of collectively up front is our rush, you know, working together better. Those things are areas of improvement for us, to where when you are getting double teamed, someone else is taking advantage of that opportunity and finding ways to get one-on-ones. You can structure your front different ways to keep slides off of guys, and you can structure your rush package to game off those slides. So I think we can do collectively a better job of putting guys in position up front to have more opportunities, and Jeff should benefit from that. Again, I think that's part of what I talked about earlier, just that outside linebacker group and defensive line group working together more often, meeting together more often, so we can do a better job balancing our rushes. We can do a better job gaming our rushes and getting guys in position to get one-on-one. So that's on us coaching wise too, to do a better job of that. So yeah, Jeff's going to get double teamed. He's not going to win all of them. Then there's going to be times where we got to help him find opportunities to get one-on-ones.
That's Brian Callahan earlier this offseason talking about Jeffrey Simmons, double teams, and how the players around him can help him in those situations. Ian, I hear that, and all that sounds great in theory. But then it comes back to the same question I have, which is, all right, well, who on the Titans beyond Jeffrey Simmons on that line, on the edge rusher group
right
now?
Can you run some games with right there?
Yeah. Who's doing that? Who's winning a lot of those one-on-ones?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they don't have anybody that can win one-on-ones sometimes, but can you do it often enough? Like, is Arden Key one-on-one going to win a lot of those?
Not enough.
I think we've seen that the answer to that is probably no.
Mm-hmm.
Is Femi Oladejo as a rookie going to win a lot of those? Maybe. We'll see.
Hard to expect it.
But it's hard to expect that right now. You know, Draymond Jones, who was a good player
in
Seattle.
I don't remember watching a lot of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine.
So I don't, you know, I'm not super familiar with his game. I'll have to go back and watch some in Seattle. But he hasn't done it before.
No.
So you're kind of, you know, projecting here.
So, like, I understand the idea of trying to, you know, work together better and, you know, the meetings that they've been doing. And, you know, even Simmons, when Simmons has been asked about the double team stuff, it's part of what he said, too, is like the whole line has got to work together better. And all that sounds great.
It would be nice for him to be at more of the minicamp.
It would be nice.
If you want to get on the same page.
Yeah, you know.
But that's okay.
Maybe get out there on the field. Yeah.
Voluntary.
It is voluntary. But are they actually equipped to do that is going to be the question. I mean, this is, again, where Sweat comes in. I mean, if he's getting one-on-ones or if he's drawing enough attention where they got to start double-teaming him, then, yeah, that would help Jeffrey Simmons a lot. So,
yeah,
so much of this is going to come down to Sweat. Like, the more you really look at it and the more you think about it.
He seems to have the most potential of somebody to do that.
Yeah, like, he's going to have to be a beast this year. Like,
maybe Oladejo could be a beast.
Maybe. I mean, look, we talked about him the other day. The expectation seems to be that it's going to take him a while, and I understand why.
He's raw.
That's
yeah.
the expectation. But it would sure be great if that's not the case. Like, if he came out and you felt pretty good pretty quickly that he was ready to go this year. Because, you know, outside of that right now, the edge rusher group just doesn't look very strong. And look, you drafted T'Vondre Sweat high in the second round at that position. When that's not a premium position, and it wasn't necessarily a position of need. You could have gone a bunch of different directions.
That's true.
At that spot in the draft. So when you do that, and when you pick him as high as they did, they need him to be an absolute stud.
They need an impact for sure.
They need him to be a stud.
It'd be nice more than just a run-stuffing impact when you're there.
Right.
At that point.
And I thought he was fine as a rookie. Like, I didn't walk away saying that, oh, T'Vondre, that's a bad pick. But
no.
I think there's another level that he's going to have to get to. Like, if this defense is going to be better this year, he's got to be a huge, huge part of it. And I'll tell you another thing. Like, we spend so much time focusing on pass rush, and I understand why. The Titans were 26th in the league against the run last year. They gave up 133.9 yards on the ground per game. And I know there's a couple in there that – kind of inflate that number. Like, we talked about the Washington game the other day when they ran for 267 or whatever it was, and I know Green Bay came in here and ran for a ton of yards on them too. So there were a few games in there that you could point to where they just got gashed on the ground. But that can't happen this year. Like, you know, forget the pass rush stuff, which I think is going to be a massive challenge for them all year long. If you can't rush the passer, you better be able to stop the run.
You got
to
make it one-dimensional.
Yeah, you can't do both. Like, you can't be bad at both. You can't not be able to stop the run and also not be able to get after the passer, which is basically what they were last year, which is part of the reason why you end up 3-14.
I wonder how much they put the run game deficiencies last year on defense with the inside linebacker group.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that played into it because they tried to address it with Cody Barton.
Right.
And they brought in Lorenzo Carter and they're hoping a big jump from Cedric Gray. So maybe they, you know, the inside linebacker group last year was not good.
No.
And it was not a help in the run game whatsoever. So maybe that can, you know, get everybody on the same page a little bit more in the run gap scheme. I don't know. There were just some times where I don't know if people didn't know where they were supposed to go or they were just trying to freelance too much, and it just left gaps wide open during some of those. And a lot of it is the running quarterback situation. You know, when they went up against those kind of schemes where the zone, little zone fake read option kind of stuff really threw them off.
Well, and you're going to see more of that this year too. Like, you've got to find a way to be able to deal with that if you're the Titans. But I'm with you. Like, I mean, even go back and look at the Washington game. Jaden Daniels hurt him running the ball in that game. But, I mean, just straight up turn around and hand it off. They just got crushed in that game. And you're right. Like, the linebacker part of it is going to be hopefully a lot better this year. You know, we'll see. Cody Barton has been fine.
They signed him to a pretty good deal for an inside linebacker deal.
Yeah.
in free agency, I think they're expecting good things from him.
I agree. So I mean, he's been fine.
He sounded cool in his presser.
He's had over 100 tackles with the Broncos last year. I think he had 106, and then the year before that in Washington, 121. So I mean, he's around the football, and he's going to need to be for this defense. Again, like you can't be inefficient at rushing the quarterback and not able to stop the run on a consistent basis and think you've got any sort of chance as a defense. And look, that's true. I don't care if L'Jarius Sneed is all-pro level L'Jarius Sneed and he's on the field for 17 games. If you can't rush the passer and you can't stop the run, then it's not going to matter all that much. Like, it'll matter some. And I'm not saying L'Jarius Sneed's not going to be important to all this year. But if you can't stop the run the way they couldn't stop it last year and you can't get after the passer, it just really puts you behind the eight ball as a defense. And we talked the other day about Denard Wilson. Like, he's part of this too. And, you know, there are no doubt limitations personnel-wise that he's going to be dealing with this year. So how do you come up with some sort of solution to mitigate some of that? Now, look, at the end of the day, it's a player's league. It's not an X's and O's league. Like, you got to have the guys
especially
to go out there and do it.
If you get them in a one-on-one.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do.
You
got to
win your one-on-one matchups. If you got your guys who you feel like are your one-on-one winners and they're not, I mean, there's only so much a coach can do. You're right about that.
But I look at him and I say, all right, what can you change? What are some things that you can do to help your guys out this year? And again, like you said, if you get them in one-on-one situations, do you have guys that can win often enough in those situations to get it done? I just look at this, and a big theme in this Fowler piece was, number one, the situation the Titans were in and how often they're trailing in games. And number two, just the, you know, they mentioned the loss of DeNico Autry in this piece and what a big deal that is for Simmons. And there's no doubt. Like, you watch it last year and you're like, man, this team really missed DeNico Autry.
There were times during that Vrabel run where the Simmons, Autry, Harold Landry, just their combos and the games, so to speak, that they played and the picks and the stuff in the front, that worked pretty well.
Yep.
on the D-line there. And there was pretty good chemistry. And there was definitely times where it was rolling for streaks where they were pretty hot. And didn't see any of that much really last year at all.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. I saw another piece from ESPN yesterday that when I saw the title of it, I was like, well, I think Titans may rank pretty low in this. And it turns out they do. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. .1025 The Game is teamed up with Pella Windows and the Nashville Humane Association for a puppy pet adoption this Saturday at Pella, 277 Mallory Station Road in Cool Springs from 10 to noon. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Robbie Stanley, Ian Safar here with you. Rex Road is out today. He will be back tomorrow. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025, our phone number. So, Ian, I saw a piece that Bill Barnwell came out with yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the headline of it, and I was like, oh, boy. I think the Titans may be pretty low in this one.
Yes.
So it says, ranking NFL wide receivers, tight ends, running back groups for 2025, the best and worst team. So, in other words, which teams have the best wide receiver, tight end, running back groups,
skilled
combos,
guys, kinda,
skilled guys,
yeah.
And which teams have the worst? And I was like, you know, are the Titans going to be dead last in this? And guess what? Titans are dead last in this. In 2024, they were 19th, so last year 19th in this, 2023 29th, so a couple years ago they were towards the bottom of this, and now they are dead last. And it goes through, you know, Tony Pollard at the running back position and how they've not seen a ton of explosiveness from Tajay Spears to this point at running back, basically talking about Calvin Ridley being the one guy at wide receiver, and you've got Tyler Lockett, who was a cap casualty in Seattle, whose numbers are on the way down, is the number two guy, and that's not a place to be. And then relying on 2 fourth-round wide receivers, as we know. And then going, you know, I don't even know if they even mentioned the tight ends in here. I mean, they just
I don't think so.
They just kind of move past the Titans' tight ends as if they weren't there. So that kind of shows you what they think of the Titans.
Spears was disappointing last year as far as explosive plays. You know, they drafted him in the third round, I think, to get more explosive plays and for speed, because they were lacking that, and that did not really come to fruition last year.
I mean, honestly, as you look around the rest of the league, it's kind of hard to argue with the Titans being number 32.
It is. That's probably where they should be.
Yeah, like I think they have some players that have hope and have a chance. Like, I think Io Manor has a chance. DK, we'll see exactly how they want to use him this year. But again, you're talking about 2 fourth-round picks there. Not that you can't find good fourth-round picks that are good receivers in the league, because you can. But it's hard to know exactly what to expect from them in year one. At tight end, right now, like, until proven otherwise, they've got just a bunch of dudes in there.
Yep.
Like, Josh Wiley
can't stay healthy.
Just a guy, and he can't stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Chig is not anywhere near consistent enough. He'll make a great play every now and then where you're like, man, that was awesome. Watch him go with the ball in his hands after the catch.
Then a drop.
But then he'll drop it, and it doesn't happen consistently enough on that front either. So, look, maybe Gunnar Helm ends up being a really good player at tight end. There are some guys that they've got that have a chance. But to me, when you look at not only what they have, but what a lot of the rest of these teams have, like even Carolina, who's at 31, who doesn't have very good skill group. I mean, they just drafted Tet McMillan pretty high.
Yep.
They got my boy Xavier Leggett going into year two.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can see some promise there from them. It's hard to get anywhere but 32 with the Titans.
I would agree. I mean, number 2 and number 3 receivers for the Titans. I mean, honestly, 2 through 6 might be as bad as any team in the league.
I agree.
You know, I don't know. Ridley, he's probably not a true number 1. Ideally, his best seasons, you know, were as the number 2 to Julio, I think, for the most part. You know, that's where he kind of thrived. He would be an awesome number 2.
I agree.
But as a number 1, you worry about that. And, yeah, the 2 through 6 holes are just extremely bad, you know. I mean, Lockett is smaller, lost a step, slower now. I love him as a character guy. And, you know, years ago I really thought he was kind of underrated. But as the years have gone on, he's kind of slipped. You know, Van Jefferson seems like a great professional, great pro. I guess they say he's a good blocker. But, you know, what's that going to do for your big playability here? DK, Io Manor, rookies, you don't really know what you got there. Treylon Burks, a 0. We'll be surprised if he makes the team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at that point you're down to Bryce Oliver, who showed promise. But what are you going to get from him? We don't know yet. And then you're hoping on, you know, Restrepo and Cam Ward going to dink and dunk themselves to garbage time this year.
We've talked about the Predators and how a lot of their strategy seems to be hope for next year. Like, you hope Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marceau have a bigger year. You hope your defense bounces back, all these things. You hope your goalie plays better. Like, a lot of this with the Titans receiving core specifically is hope. This year, like, number one, you need Ridley to be available for all 17 games, and you know how important that connection is between him and Ward to start. But other than that, like, it's basically like, can you get significant contributions from Io Manor and DK in year one?
I wonder if DK can turn into the big play guy.
Maybe. I mean, he's got speed.
He's got the speed. I mean, Io Manor is not slow. He seems to be more of the taller possession type.
Yeah.
The 50-50 go up and get it guy, which you need. You know, maybe he can play kind of like the T. Higgins role in that offense, like they did in Cincinnati under Callahan when he was the OC. So maybe he can kind of play that role. But they need someone who can stretch the field, because they don't really have a lot of speed. Although Ridley's not slow.
No.
But you need somebody who can, you know, still go deep. Like our boy Chris Sanders is always saying, take the top off the defense.
Right.
So,
I mean, the one thing I'll say about Lockett, and I understand he's going to be 33 in September. So the numbers have been steadily going down here for a few years. but that's probably like you're probably not getting a 900 yard season out of Tyler Lockett this year. It's difficult to expect that based on where things are going. Last year he had 49 catches, 600 yards. The one thing I'll say for him is he's been unbelievably durable. Like he has been a very healthy player.
And that will be key.
Yeah, and he's
so people can keep their roles at least for this first year and let some of these guys develop.
And you know, does that start to change when he's 33 years old in the NFL? Maybe. I mean, all it takes is one hit, as we know in the NFL. But he has been, I mean, look at his, you know, 16 games when he was back when it was a 16 game schedule, he was pretty much playing every year or every game every year. Since it's flipped to 17 games, he's either been at the 17 game mark or the 16 game mark. So he has been very healthy and very durable to this point in his career. They need that to continue to be the case because it's already it's a paper thin group anyway on when you look at it. And then you start to let your mind wander. It's like, all right, well, what happens if Ridley goes down for 5 games? You know, what happens if Tyler Lockett's not there?
Then you're in real time trouble.
And you're in real trouble. You've got 2 fourth-round rookies that you're relying on at that point. We'll see what happens with Restrepo.
Or an undrafted free agent.
Exactly. But you start to get light quickly if you run into an injury or two at the receiver level. Like, they really need – they need a couple of guys to emerge and have better years than we think right now as we sit here on July the 9th. But, you know, it's hard to argue with the skill group right now for the Titans. It's just not a very impressive skill group. You hope a couple of things offset that. Number one, you hope Cam Ward comes in and is really good immediately.
Maybe he can elevate
some of these guys.
That's what you want from your top quarterback, right? That's why all these guys are getting paid.
Yep.
Like Mahomes and Allen and other wide receivers they're letting the wide receivers walk, you know? Just try and have the quarterback elevate the rest of them around him.
So you hope that happens, and you also hope that there's an offensive line play that's improved to the point where that helps some of that too. Like giving your quarterback more time to sit back there and throw the ball, more time for some of these routes to develop, more room for some of your running backs to get some space out there. Like all that helps when you don't have, you know, the talent that some of these other teams are going to have at the skill position.
We've said it before, but surely the O-line will have to be better this year. I mean, bringing in Dan Moore and bringing in Zeitler, swinging Latham over to the right side. I don't know. Feel like it should be pretty solid. But we'll see. I don't know. Well, hopefully, I think Latham to the right side actually will be a good thing.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think that'll be good. Whether or not Dan Moore pans out, we'll see. But can't be worse.
It'd be very hard to be worse. Lenny says, Titans sound like a lot of hopes and maybes. I would agree with that. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, you hope we don't get curb stomped every game. You hope the overpaid offensive lineman doesn't get Ward killed. You hope the defense gets sacked. Lots of hope every year with this team.
Hope, hope, hope.
A lot of hope going on.
You always have hope.
Especially this time of year. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Some interesting comments from Kirk Cousins on the new quarterback series that's out on Netflix. We'll get into some of that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.